Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Arsenal Women Arsecast on arseblog.com with me, Tim Stillman. Now, I'm aware that when I record these rambling preambles for the podcast, I pretty much always describe the episodes as a special episode. And in a sense, I'm right, because all of the episodes are special. We're very proud of this podcast and some of the material that we put out. So I'm not going to apologize for, again, labeling this as a special episode, because we have a very special guest in Arsenal legend Julie Fleeting. Now, some of you will know that there was a documentary on BBC Alba, that's the kind of Scottish BBC channel, last Sunday the 10th of April, an hour-long documentary, well, a little bit more than an hour, actually, about Julie's career. And when I heard that this documentary was being made and that it was going to air, I was really, really happy, because there are so many players from the women's game from not even that long ago, certainly not that long ago, if you're my age anyway, you know, just over 10, 15 years ago, who achieved extraordinary things. And I feel like archiving and history is such a gap when we talk about the women's game. And there's so little kind of footage and so few things to go on when we talk about some of the fairly recent legends of the women's game. And Julie Fleeting is absolutely a legend of the women's game. And so this documentary is about her career from when she was growing up in Scotland, went to play in the US, obviously came to Arsenal after that, playing while she was a mother, and bringing her daughter Ella to training and to Scotland national team training camps and things like that. And I've always felt like Julie's legacy is quite overlooked, not least, I think, for a couple of reasons. First of all, like I said, the kind of lack of footage that was available at the time. A lot of her kind of feats aren't really archived particularly well. We don't have a lot of footage of her doing things like scoring hat-tricks in FA Cup finals, winning the European Cup with Arsenal. She was part of that legendary team in 2006-07 that won the quadruple. But one of the things that the documentary really brings out is some of the barriers really that she faced. It's quite extraordinary to think about now, but Julie didn't train with Arsenal. She was a PE teacher in Scotland. So what she used to do was she would train twice a week with a local team, a local men's team, I believe, an under 21 side. And every Sunday morning, she'd catch a flight from Scotland to wherever Arsenal were playing, meet at the team hotel, get changed with her team, play, and then fly back on the Sunday evening. And sometimes at away matches, she was literally substituted after 60 or 70 minutes because she had to go and be on a flight. And she did this for years for Arsenal. And when you consider that and her goal-scoring record at the club, 130 goals in 122 appearances for Arsenal. Absolutely extraordinary. And to put that into some kind of perspective, I mean, that's better than a goal a game. And even Vivian Miedema can't boast that at the moment. She's close, but not quite there. So that really puts into perspective the sort of levels that Julie was reaching at Arsenal and for the Scottish national side. She has 116 goals and 121 caps for Scotland. And when you consider that Scotland weren't, you know, an international superpower while she was playing, that's an extraordinary record as well. And I'm really happy that a documentary has kind of gone out to document the extraordinary things Julie did in her career and fairly recently as well. So I had a really good kind of 40-minute chat with Julie, and I was really humbled to be able to have the chance to do that, because I watched Julie play for Arsenal, and she really is a club legend, and one I think that's a little bit overlooked, maybe because she wasn't an England international as well. She was a Scotland international. And it was really great to be able to speak with her about her career. Just some details about the documentary, if you don't already know. It went out on BBC Alba on Sunday, the 10th of April. It is being repeated On Friday, the 15th of April at 10 p.m. on BBC Albert, if you'd like to watch it. But if not, fear not, it's on the BBC iPlayer, I believe, until the 9th of May. So plenty of chance to watch it. And I really, really strongly recommend that you do. And if you're not convinced yet, well, here's my chat with Julie Fleeting about her extraordinary career. Okay, absolutely delighted to be joined by Arsenal and Scotland legend Julie Fleeting to the show. Julie, thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Thank you for inviting me on.
So, Julie, kind of the reason we're doing this interview is obviously BBC Alba screened a documentary about you, which went out last week. At what stage did someone approach you with the idea of doing a documentary about your career? What was that kind of process from, I guess, concept to filming?
Yeah, I think it was last summer. I remember sitting on the beach enjoying the Scottish sunshine when I had a phone call from a girl, Sarah, at Purple TV, to say that she had been approved funding to make this documentary, and would I agree to have it made? Would I agree to be a part of it and include family and friends in it? And yeah, I mean, obviously I was delighted. I was looking forward to kind of reliving all the best moments in my career. And from then on, it was just a matter of setting up interviews with the people that they wanted to speak to, and a gradual process of pulling everything together.
And did they kind of explain why they wanted to do the documentary? I mean, I was really pleased when I heard about this, just because in many respects, I think you were kind of unfortunate that your career, I mean, I know you played in the WSL a bit just after its launch, mm-hmm. but your career kind of came just before that boom, I guess. And I wondered whether that was kind of discussed with you in terms of why Purple TV wanted to do this documentary.
I think it was probably just because, or one of the reasons would have been because I had kind of lived through that process of the acceleration of the sport. I had kind of been at the start when there wasn't an awful lot of publicity. There wasn't an awful lot of female teams, girls teams when I was younger. And I was able then to kind of live through the process of the increase in popularity and participation. And although when I ended my career, it wasn't at the stage it's at the moment, but certainly I was able to see such a huge jump. And it was probably the story was a good one, because it started off with me at a boys' club, because there was no female teams, and all the way to kind of playing for Arsenal, as you say, in the top league.
Yeah, and that was actually going to be my next question, really. It's even now, I think it's quite common for current professionals to have started playing with boys. Like, I know Vivian Miedema, for example, you know, one of your predecessors as an Arsenal striker, she played with boys till she was 14. And there's a lot of current professionals who still kind of came up that way. In the documentary, it touches on the fact that in the kind of late 80s, you and some friends created a team comprised of girls who hadn't made local boys teams, which is actually something I think Nikita Paris did as well when she was a teenager. And she certainly name checked you as one of her idols. And I guess my question, I like asking this question to footballers, but at what age did you realise that you were good?
I don't think I ever thought about kind of how good my ability was. I think I was just so immersed in loving the game, loving being part of a team, getting the opportunity. When I joined the boys team, I was age 9. And before that, I had gone along to my cousin's team to watch him play. I would play at the side with the subs before they went on, have a kick about there. I would play in the street. And for me, it never entered my head that I would get the opportunity to put a strip on at that age and be part of a kind of organisation. So the moment I got that opportunity and realised that they had got permission for me to then join this boys team, I was just so immersed in the football side of it, that thinking about, oh, hang on, I might be able to go to a higher level, I might be able to play for my country, it never really entered my head. And it was probably just took each step as it kind of came along. And for me, I'm glad it happened that way, because I wouldn't have liked to have tried to look too far ahead, and I was very grateful then for kind of everything that was given to me at that stage.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that really came across to me in the documentary. I've spoken to people like Kelly Smith before and Rachel Yankee, and their kind of, you know, their youth careers like sounded like a fight, you know, and Kelly talks a lot about how the opposition to her playing drove her on. You've got this amazing story of Rachel Yankee shaving her head and pretending to be a boy to be able to play with boys teams. But what kind of came across in the documentary to me is that that didn't seem so much like the situation for you, that not that you weren't bothered, but that it didn't feel like such a kind of a fight for acceptance for you. Is that accurate, do you think?
I think I joined a great team in the boys club I went to. They were kind of very respectful. They fought my corner in terms of with the league to make sure that I could continue to play. And I think my mum and dad were a big part of that. They almost helped in every hurdle where that was taken away from me. And they would find the next step. So when I had to leave the boys team, it was then about finding a girls team, which was a bit further away for me. And then they would take the obstacle away of, well, we can get you there. We can get you to and from training. We can get you to teams. And I probably really all I had to think about was enjoying my football. And I didn't look too much into the fact that my brother was playing games every week with teams who were within 3 miles of him, where I was playing against teams in the north of Scotland and in the south of Scotland and the east, because that's how far we had to travel to kind of get a game. I didn't really think of it like that. It was just exciting at the time that I was getting the opportunity to kind of be involved in the sport and to continue what I had loved so much about playing in the boys team.
Yeah, and I think your brother says at one point in the documentary that you were pretty good at hockey and pretty good at basketball, and that perhaps those sports, you know, particularly I guess in the 90s, had maybe less barriers for girls who kind of wanted to pursue that. Did you have a sense of that at all, or was it just that it was just always football that was your overriding passion?
I loved all sports. When I went to secondary, that's when I got the opportunities kind of opened where I played basketball and hockey, and then I went to clubs as well at night. So I played for club teams in basketball and hockey. My hockey would have been on a Saturday morning. I would play with the club team or Saturday afternoon, and then football was a Sunday. So I had opportunities with other sports, and yeah, they were definitely easier in terms of the amount of participants and the amount of teams that were in our local area. But for me, there was never any question about where my heart was in terms of what sport I wanted to play for the rest of my kind of sporting life. And I just felt differently about football. There was just something about it that was just special. And although I loved the other sports, I was never going to choose them over football.
And the documentary also covers that when you were at Ayr United as a teenager, you kind of went on a bit of a tour in Brazil. I mean, what was that like as an experience? And was that a point where you thought, oh, wow, I'm going to another continent to play football. This is getting serious now.
Yeah, that was incredible. That was my second cap. So we went over to Brazil. I was 15 at the time. I remember I was at the stage where I was going through my hires at secondary school. And I was allowed away as long as I kind of studied while I was there. It was quite an important time in my education as well. But I was 15 years old. I was travelling to Brazil to get my second, third and fourth cap while I was there. And it was a real eye-opener. Brazil were absolutely miles ahead of us in terms of where they were in the women's game and the ability of the team. And we just chased them about for 90 minutes in all three of the games. And yeah, I knew then I had quite a lot of work to do if I wanted to kind of compete with the best and the best countries in the world, and if I wanted to kind of seriously continue my football career. But I think that was probably a good thing, because I got to see that, not to be complacent, in the league in Scotland we were doing really well in. I was in the national team along with a number of my teammates at Ayr United at a very young age, but it allowed me not to be complacent and see that there's still an awful lot of hard work still to go.
Yeah, speaking of hard work, and another thing the documentary covers, and I know probably a real highlight of your career, was when Scotland, the extraordinary story of Scotland needing to beat Lithuania 17-0 and managing it, thanks to a stoppage time header from yourself. I wonder, in I believe that was the 1999 World Cup qualification campaign, and I wonder whether, you know, obviously a great personal memory for you and for your teammates, but I wonder whether you ever reflect in these years, when you look at a Scotland team at the moment, or at least in the last few years, that's had the likes of Kim Little, Lisa Evans, Erin Cuthbert. Do you ever, and Caroline Weir, and really, like, Scotland is producing really, really good talent in the women's game still. Mm-hmm. Do you ever kind of reflect and think, maybe I played a bit of a part in that?
No, I don't. I know that along with the other girls who played for Scotland at the time, then we did kind of help bring on the game. But I also think there's a lot of hard work from so many people to get it there. It wasn't just the players who were on the pitch. There was a lot of work going behind the scenes, and obviously we were the front of it, and driving forward and trying to get the right results. We're really proud. The other night when my documentary was first aired, there was a number of girls who were in the documentary. We were together watching it along with my family, and we're all really proud of where the game is now, and we're really proud of the players who pull on the jersey. We know what it meant to us, and you can see, I was at the game last night, Scotland-Spain game, and you can see what it means to everyone that pulls on the Scotland jersey, and you just never want to lose that.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, like a lot of players at the time, certainly high-level players, you went to the US to play for San Diego Spirit. First of all, how difficult was it for you to be away from home? And did you have this sense that this was something you had to do? And was there anyone else at San Diego in a similar situation to you?
Yeah, it was definitely, I said in the documentary, and you'll have seen that, it was the hardest thing that I ever had to do, was to move away. There wasn't the kind of means of keeping in touch with people as it is today, in terms of all your kind of social media and mobile phones being so accessible. It was really difficult. I remember meeting my team. I was going to meet them in Boston because they had an away game. So almost halfway in the flight. And I remember thinking, I'm landing in Boston Airport. I've no phone to get in touch with the admin or the player liaison who was going to be meeting me. I've no idea of Boston Airport, where the team will be. And I just remember the fear of, first of all, how will I find them? And second of all, I'm going to step on the bus with a team full of superstars, players at the playing at the highest level in the game, and I'm going to have to just try and slot in as quickly as possible. And it was something that I couldn't say no to, whether I wanted to or not. I felt that I had been given this opportunity, the opportunity that millions of females would jump at, and I couldn't possibly say no for that reason. And a big part of me, of course, didn't want to say no. It would have been easier to say no, because I wouldn't have had to kind of go over all the hurdles and try and really settle in. But I'm so glad now that I made the step. And my first season was really hard, but the second season I absolutely loved.
Yeah, I had a similar conversation a couple of years ago with Lisa Evans, who was kind of at university, I believe, when she had an offer to play in Germany. And she said something very similar, that she just, you know, she didn't want to leave home. She didn't want to leave her degree, but she, you know, she really felt she had to take it. And again, mm-hmm. Lisa is, you know, like a generation after you, and like women's footballers are still kind of having to make those choices. But maybe, you know, in this day and age, the kind of the US option, as it were, which so many players took, like Kelly Smith, like Alex Scott, you know, maybe they don't have to take that option quite as much anymore with the WSL. Do you think that, were the WSL as it is now, that you'd have perhaps just gone to a WSL club, maybe straight to a club like Arsenal? Or do you still think that going abroad, I guess, do you still think that going abroad actually in the long run really had probably more value to you?
I think it had more value to me in different aspects of life, not just football, but to then be able to go over there. And I was 21 at the time. I had graduated, I missed my graduation ceremony and graduation ball to leave instantly as soon as I had qualified and go to America. And I think for me, generally as a person and in my character, it helped me more going to America. I think the people that I got to meet there and the different cultures and just a different way of life was really helpful in building up who I am now. I think I'm delighted that was the kind of only option at the time to be a full-time professional, and now to have friends on the other side of the world and to have lived through those experiences, I'm really, really grateful now for.
And I guess bringing it back to Arsenal, since we are an Arsenal podcast, Vic Akers said he kind of chased your signature for a long time. How long were you aware of this, and when did you first speak to Vic, and how did kind of signing for Arsenal come about?
I had known, I think, before I had gone over to America that they had been interested in signing me. I think he had watched a Scotland-England game that I had played in. So I had known then that he was kind of wanting to speak to me, but then I had taken the option at that point to go abroad and go to California. But when I returned, I think he had got in touch and I had agreed to have a chat and see what the options would be. And from then on in, Vic just made it really easy for me to slot in at Arsenal and took all the kind of issues and barriers away, that are problems that I might have had, and allowed me then just to go to Arsenal and concentrate on my football.
Yeah, and I won't linger too much on the kind of fairly extraordinary details and not least the commute that you were doing to play for Arsenal, because we want people to watch the documentary and find out. But needless to say, you commuted from Scotland to play for Arsenal on a Sunday. And when you arrived at Arsenal, you know, you'd already played in the US, where, like you say, it was pretty much the only fully professional setup around. And I know it's difficult because you didn't really train much with Arsenal, but you'd been in a pro in the US at that time. How did the environment at Arsenal compare, and how did you get a sense that the environment at Arsenal was different perhaps to other clubs in England?
I had been part of a professional team where we had trained every day together, and we were very close, and I was very much a part of that team. When I went to Arsenal, I could see they were close. I could see that they were very professional. I could see the quality of players that they had in the dressing room. I could see all of that in match days. I was almost like a kind of stranger looking in at times, especially at the start. And I was through no fault of the players that were there. They worked really hard to kind of include me in the team, but it's very difficult to kind of do that initially when you're only seeing each other at getting changed, doing the warm-up during the game, and then I'm gone again for another week until the next game comes around. So they definitely had a team littered with talent in every single season that I played there at Arsenal. And of course, that was kind of built by Vic. He always could attract the best players at Arsenal and then also get the best out of them when they were there. So it was every year. It was a dressing room where you would look around and go, I'm glad I'm in the same team as the players in here.
Yeah, and you talk as well in the documentary about, because you weren't training with the team, doing your job as a PE teacher in Scotland, I guess the difficulty of creating those relationships and friendships, and that kind of amusing story where you pretend to like tea just so you
can
spend...
I don't think I ever told the players this story. So, yeah, like,
I know now.
Very tragic, very tragic story. Yeah, like, I was just, we had gone away. This story was when we were in Russia, I remember, and we had gone away and we were going to be away for maybe a week to 10 days. And I had only ever spent a maximum of 2 hours with the team prior to that. So very difficult to kind of, I would observe in the changing room a lot. I was probably extremely quiet and kind of just got on with my job. But this was then an opportunity for me to try and get to know people and kind of integrate off the pitch. So yeah, my story of pretending to like tea is a sad one. I'm well aware of that, but it worked and I became a part of the team and part of the friendship group, and it helps me socially now to enjoy a cup of tea with people. I feel like a proper adult now.
Been anglicised. I don't think it goes into this in the documentary. You say that was in Russia. Was that the 2006 group stage?
Yes, I think so. Yeah.
And so am I right in saying that if I remember rightly, Vic wasn't there and Emma Hayes took the team. Is that right?
Oh, you could be right. What I probably should have said to you at the start of this is my memory. There are certain things that stand out, but yeah, that not everything is crystal clear, but we were in safe hands with Emma, that's for sure.
Yeah. So for listeners that don't know, there was basically a group stage that happened in Russia, but it happened in about a week. So they got the group stage out of the way in about 7 days in one venue. So this was the beginning of Arsenal's triumphant 2006-07 UEFA Cup campaign, which we'll come on to in a minute. But before that, I'd like to come on to the 2004 FA Cup final, which is a game I remember very well. I was there as a supporter. Maybe do you want to tell our listeners why that was a particularly special day for you at Loftus Road?
The day before we had played Germany in a qualifier in Scotland, and I think that would be the Sunday afternoon, and then straight after the game I was on a flight down to London to meet up with the team because we had the FA Cup final less than 24 hours later. So, but in the game itself I had taken a knock and had a dead leg, and you're fine in a game to continue playing, but the minute you stop playing then the kind of stiffness and pain sets in. So when I had gone down to the team hotel, I remember the physios were on hand to kind of help me through it and try and recover as quickly as I possibly could, because I think our game was possibly was a midday kickoff. So it was a race against time to try and kind of get fit for what was going to be my first cup final in an Arsenal jersey. So for me, I was just desperate to play. I had signed in the January, had loved my football, had been kind of a part of the FA Cup story from that moment onwards. It was my first game for Arsenal was in the FA Cup, and I wanted to see it out. I wanted to be a part of the team and wanted to get myself on the pitch. And luckily, thanks to the physios at Arsenal, I was able to start the game and be in the winning team in the end.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just remember having no idea about, it speaks to the kind of, I guess, the lack of coverage at the time. I had no idea that Scotland had even played the day before. So I kind of just turned up, saw you bang in some goals and Arsenal win the cup. And I didn't read about this backstory until afterwards. Quite extraordinary. But another final I was at as a fan as well, quite extraordinary, 2007 against Umeå. I was at the second leg anyway at Boreham Wood, one of the most nerve-wracking games I think I've ever seen. And Arsenal, of course, did something very extraordinary, winning what is now recognised as the Champions League. And I've spoken to Kelly Smith about this. I've spoken to Faye White about this game and the importance of it. And you know, it's hard to get across the strength of Umeå with players like Hanna Lundberg and a young Marta at the time. And obviously Arsenal were without Kelly Smith for both legs due to suspension. And one of the questions I asked Kelly, actually, because obviously she got herself sent off and in a bit of bother in the semi-final. Mm-hmm. And one of the questions I asked her was actually whether her absence really helped solidify Arsenal's game plan, which was really unusual for Arsenal at the time to be big underdogs and to play quite defensively. And I wonder, you know, as like one of the attackers in the team, whether you had that sense as well, or I guess what your emotions were when you realised you'd be playing this huge game against probably superior opposition and without the best player. Like as a striker yourself, did that? How did that feel going into that game?
I mean, of course, we were obviously all gutted to not have Kelly on the pitch. She was such an important player for us, and it just meant that the rest of us wanted to work harder and make sure that at the end that she was going to pick up a medal alongside the rest of us. So I think at that point, yes, Kelly was a star, but we had a real team spirit, and we had a team who were willing to really work super hard for each other. And I think that's what kind of got us through both legs, was the fact that we did have that strength and work hard, the ability to kind of work hard throughout the 90 minutes on both legs. So I think we didn't get too many opportunities to attack. So probably the majority of my game, certainly in the second half and the second leg, was all about defending and kind of trying to help the team and make sure that we had a clean sheet. And kind of thanks to Emma Byrne and goals, yep, who saved us in numerous occasions, then it was always going to be Arsenal's day after that, when you kind of look at the clips of near misses and crossbar and post and saves that Emma made, the story was written for us.
Yeah, I remember, and I can't remember who had the shot, but the ball came off the post, hit Emma on the head and just went wide. And at that point, you start to think very nervously, yeah, this might be our day. But you referenced the defensive aspect there. And of course, Arsenal were also kind of without Faye White. She'd just come back from an ACL injury, so she was on the bench. And so there were quite a lot of young players in that team, like Anita Asante. I believe she was about 20 at the time. Mm-hmm. Karen Carney as well, who was about 20 at the time. So there were Leanne Sanderson as well. She was quite young at the time. Like, did you have that sense as well? Or was it just a case that all of the players were just at a really high level? Did you have that sense of trying to look after some of the younger players on this occasion?
I think these players were young, but they were ready. They were players who weren't fazed by the three you mentioned there. They weren't fazed by the occasion. They didn't come across as being young and inexperienced. They slotted into a very experienced side extremely well. And I wasn't experienced in a cup final of that size in European football. So it would be wrong for me to say that I was pulling them through the game. I mean, all three of those players are not just great players, but they've got great character within the dressing room and great confidence in their own ability. So for them to kind of compete at that level against such a fantastic side just shows you the calibre of player, but it also shows you the kind of dressing room. We had real leaders in there who just pulled everyone together, and you didn't feel separated in any way at that point. We were certainly a strong unit.
Yeah, and I think you can see the careers that those players went on to have, not even necessarily just at Arsenal. Just the last couple of questions, because I've kept you for quite a long time already, but yeah. I just wanted to touch on, I guess, your experiences of playing as a mother. So you kind of started playing 2 to 3 months after having your daughter, Ella, and you speak in the documentary about bringing her along to camp, for example, for Scotland games. And again, I wonder what that experience was like for you. And I guess looking at the game now, we don't see that so much in the women's game, but then, you know, I look at the moment at players like Emma Mitchell, Melanie Leupolz, and I wonder if that's starting. I don't know whether Emma and Melanie, you know, are going to be like symptomatic of a new kind of trend, I guess, or whether that's just a coincidence. But I guess your experiences of playing as a mother and playing so soon after giving birth to your daughter.
I had been a part of it in America, and it seemed to work really well. I had in my team in San Diego. Joy Fawcett had three kids, and we would travel right across America for almost every away game, and most of the time her children came with her. And I had been a part of that. I had seen it work. I had heard from the other US players about how that was the case with quite a few mums who were in their national team at the time. And I thought, I didn't realise that that's something that could work. And for me, when I had gone on to have Ella, first time mum, we were going to Cyprus, I think was our first trip, and it was a 10-day trip. And I thought, there's no way I can leave a baby who's 4 or 5 months old at the time and go away for 10 days. My husband's job wasn't easy either. He was a footballer at the time, and he couldn't just ask for a week off to kind of look after her. So I was lucky that the Scottish FA backed me in that and supported me and allowed me then to have Ella at camp. And down at Arsenal, they were very much the same. We had Katie Chapman, who was a mum, and on away trips, her son would come with us, and Vic was open to that. And I think it meant that if you take that barrier away, for me, if I had gone to Cyprus without Ella, my mind would have been elsewhere for a lot of the time. But to have her there, I could focus on my training. I knew that she was there, and if she needed her mum after training or during the night or whatever, then I was there. And I think that really helped. It helped me be able to focus on my football, and I was really grateful to the Scottish FA to allow that to happen.
Yeah, absolutely. As someone who's got a two-year-old who's taking to screaming at 3 o'clock in the morning at the moment, I don't know how you do it. My last question really, I guess, is about your legacy as an Arsenal player. And I asked a similar question in the past to Emma Byrne and to Jane Ludlow about whether they feel or whether they think about their Arsenal legacy, because I think there are a lot of players from around your time, like Kelly Smith, like Rachel Yankee, who really do have that reputation. But I kind of feel like, because the Arsenal team at that time was basically a Great Britain dream team, lots of Welsh players, Scottish players, Irish players, so I feel like actually the ones who weren't English, like Jane, like Emma, were sometimes a little bit overlooked. And when I look at, I always think that particularly up front, you can draw a line through Arsenal's history from Marianne Spacey to Kelly to yourself to Vivian Miedema. But I feel like your part in that equation is quite overlooked. And I wonder whether, first of all, whether you ever think about that or whether it's not something you think about at all. And I guess, looking at someone like Vivian Miedema now, who's, you know, a predecessor to you, you know, I guess that the feeling you get watching her, you know, and she's got a very similar goal scoring record to you. In fact, yours is slightly better than Viv's, which would probably shock quite a lot of people. So I wonder, first of all, whether you ever think about your legacy and when you see a player like Vivian Miedema and the attention that she rightfully gets, like how you feel.
No, I don't think about it. I don't need to be given any kind of recognition for what I kind of achieved on the pitch for Arsenal. I'm happy with it. I'm delighted that I was able to help the team. I'm very grateful to have been given the opportunity. I'm sure it would have been a difficult decision to kind of try and overcome all the obstacles that were going to be in the way of me pulling on an Arsenal jersey. And I'm just delighted to kind of be part of the history and the players that you talked about there at one moment. And well, actually throughout my Arsenal career, we had the England captain and Faye White. We had the Welsh captain and Jane Ludlow. We had the Irish captain and Kira Grant. And we had the Scottish captain, myself. So it was a really powerful, strong team all the way through the spine of the team. That is the right down the middle of our team at Arsenal, and I'm proud to have shared the pitch with these girls, and I'm sure they're the same. I don't feel that people need to kind of continue to talk about us and kind of give us credit. The Arsenal team nowadays are phenomenal, and I'm a strong supporter of all that they're doing.
Yeah, very much so. And, you know, I just want to thank you, first of all, Julie, for your time, because you've given us a lot of your time this morning. And I'll put aside the professional journalist part here and say, like I say, I'm a fan. I was at the 2004 Cup Final. I was at 2007. I've done this interview many times in my head before. So thanks for giving me the chance to make it a reality.
Thank you. It's been wonderful kind of reliving it all and a trip down memory lane from my Arsenal days. So thank you very much for the opportunity to do that.
Thanks very much, Julie.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at UH1.com.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog.
A massive thanks to Arsenal and Scotland legend Julie Fleeting for her time. I really, really enjoyed having the chance to chat with her. And as you may have gathered from the podcast, I was very excited about the chance to chat with her because, like I said, I watched her a lot as a player. And as I told her, that's an interview I've done in my head many, many times. And I originally pitched the interview as about 20 to 25 minutes, and we ended up running to 40 minutes because I just had so many questions, and I think the fan in me came out a little bit there. I'd also really like to thank Callum Wooja for help from Electrify for helping set up the interview, and really, really hope that you enjoyed it. And to re-emphasize, the documentary about Julie Fleeting's career on BBC Alba, it's being repeated this coming Friday, the 15th of April at 10 p.m. Otherwise, it's available on the iPlayer, the BBC iPlayer, until the 9th of May. I really strongly encourage you to watch it because, frankly, there aren't enough documentaries about some of these extraordinary female players. And not only that, but the barriers they have to overcome to play. There's also one, I believe, available on the BBC iPlayer at the moment about Jane Ludlow as well, and another Arsenal legend I had the pleasure of chatting to back in July 2020. And you can check that interview out on Arsblog News. But really, really grateful to Julie for her time and to be able to put this podcast out and I guess shine a light on the career of an Arsenal legend. Thank you very much for listening. We will be back with another podcast during the middle of next week. Myself, Alex and Pippa will have another mailbag edition for you. So keep an eye out on Twitter on Tuesday and maybe Wednesday morning, and we'll put a call for questions out. Sorry, Tuesday morning we're recording. So probably Monday evening and Tuesday morning, I will put a call out for questions on my Twitter feed at Stilberto, and we'll get as many of your questions in as possible. But thanks very much for listening, and we will speak to you next week.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.